bunker deep beneath the Treasury building in Westminster was one of several chambers in Churchill's cabinet war rooms. Instead of containing military officials, Room 60 was comprised of civilian women. Seven switchboard operators, wearing headsets and poking corded plugs into a wall of communication circuitry, sat on swivelling bar-like stools, with their backs to the typists. The rest of the space was comprised of several typists sitting at small wooden desks. It was a tight space for the women, but Rose, a petite, 5-foot-tall, 22-year-old woman, didn't mind the cramped quarters. Unlike the other women, who were much taller, Rose had short legs that fit splendidly under her desk. Some of the typists, including Rose, were products of Mrs. Hoster's Secretarial Training College in London, which had a brilliant reputation for turning out dependable assistants. And Rose believed that this schooling likely had something to do with her accelerated path to Room 60. She had not set out to work in the heart of the British military command, but when Hitler began his aerial bombing campaign on London back in September, Rose, working as a secretary in the Treasury building, was provided security clearance, led by a military guard to the basement of the building, and given a new assignment: typist for the Cabinet War Rooms. The initial days of working in the war rooms were unnerving for Rose. The close proximity of the Prime Minister and senior officers gave her a bout of the jitters, causing her to type mistakes and, on one occasion, spill a tepid cup of tea on a document she had drafted. The burnt scent of Churchill's cigar, which lingered in the stagnant basement air, had turned her stomach sour. To compound matters, the Luftwaffe air raids, which occurred on an almost nightly basis, had forced many Londoners to spend nights in shelters, and when she wasn't sleeping between shifts in the sub-basement below the war rooms, often referred to as the dock, Rose had spent nights, as the city was bombarded, with her parents in the Bethnal Green tube station. As days passed, Rose grew accustomed to the gruff demeanour of Churchill and his staff. "Their fortitude will help us survive," Rose told herself, typing a confidential report on potential locations where Hitler would commence a land invasion of Britain. The thought of Nazis marching through London sent chills up her spine. Rose, like most Londoners, forced herself to carry on despite the horrid destruction and loss of life. But the source of Rose's resilience wasn't entirely self-motivated. It was fueled, Rose believed, by the death of her brother, Charlie. Charlie, Rose's only sibling, had been killed in August when his RAF Spitfire was shot down over the Channel. His body was never recovered, and she prayed that he died fast and didn't suffer. Rose and her parents, Emilienne and Herbert, were heartbroken. Family photographs were forbidden to be displayed on desks, so Rose kept a childhood picture of Charlie, a curly-haired boy with dimpled cheeks and an infectious smile, tucked inside the top drawer of her desk. The photo was taken at their grandparents' home in France, where Rose and Charlie spent summer holidays. When Rose was doleful or exhausted, which occurred far more often than she liked to admit, she opened her drawer to see Charlie. "I miss you terribly," she would often say to herself. After closing her drawer, she would return to typing, more determined than ever to do her duty to help Britain survive. As Rose was placing a fresh sheet of stationery into her typewriter, the approaching sound of a woman's shoes clicked in the hallway. "Gwyneth has contracted tonsillitis," a middle-aged woman announced, entering the room. "We need a typist to work a 24-hour shift." Rose looked up. The secretarial supervisor, Gladys Gossick, wearing an olive wool skirt and matching jacket, stood near the doorway. The women paused, resting their hands beside their typewriters. Some of the switchboard operators, their ears covered by headsets, were unaware of Gossick's presence and continued to plug their cords into circuitry. "Lucy?" Gossick locked her eyes on the typist. Lucy nodded and then lowered her head. The typists had little, if any, say in the schedules. When overtime was needed, or when someone called out due to illness, they were randomly drafted to work double shifts. Gossick was viewed as a fair supervisor, but she seldom conversed with the staff about personal matters. Unlike Rose, who thought one should strive to know a little something about co-workers. And Rose knew from joining the women on breaks at the canteen in the Treasury building that Lucy had plans to spend the evening with her boyfriend, John.